The date is August 9, 2006, and we are at the Amelia Island Museum of History. And the following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We're interviewing Claude Colson Haddock, born October 31, 1925, in Fernandina Beach, Florida, where we are. My name is Mac McCaffrey, and I'll be the interviewer. And I'm being assisted by Gerhard Tam, who's running the machine for me ably. And with that, Claude, we're ready to go. And I want to ask you to please tell us a little bit about your pre-war, what you're doing before you entered the service, and when you entered, and what the means of your entering, where'd you go, and start just take it from there, please.
After high school, I applied for a job at the paper mills. So I worked for a short time at Rainier. Then I went over to Container and worked there. And this was, I worked up until January. After my 18th birthday, of course, I had to register for the draft. And I didn't get called until January the 7th. And I went to Camp Blanding. Well, I went down on the 6th because I was sworn into Navy on January the 7th. So I had a choice of going through the physical. I had a choice of Army or Navy, so I chose the Navy.
What year was that, please?
This was January of 44. So from there, I had 2 weeks before I had to catch the train out of Jacksonville for Bainbridge, Maryland, which was boot camp that I went to. I had 6 weeks training in boot camp. I remember the Yogi Hall, we called it, which was the exercise stress test deal, you might say. And you went through one at the start, and then you had to take another one at the end to see how much you had progressed through all your exercises. And the only thing, I guess, that was the first time I saw snow, and I slipped and slid a little bit, and didn't break any bones, but that was an experience.
What was it like leaving home to enter the Navy?
I was really homesick, really was, because I had left a girlfriend that I'd been going steady with for 3 years, and it was tough, and my family. But you soon learn to meet new people and get your mind off of that back home, because you had too many other things to think about, and they kept you busy. So after boot camps, I came home for leave, went back to Bainbridge, waiting assignment to where I would go next. So they offered me a couple of schools, but I turned them down, a signalman school, a radioman school, and I asked them where it was going to be, and they said right there at the base. So I said, well, I don't want any part of that. I want to get something closer home. So instead of staying there, they put me in the amphibs, which was in Solomons, Maryland. And that was a base right out on the Chesapeake Bay where they did training for LCI crews.
Is that spelled Solomons?
Solomons. S-O-L-O-M-O-N-S. Solomons Island. And they swear they made up the crews. They got the gun crew from Little Creek, Virginia. And they put these crews together. In the meantime, they sent me to boatswain mate school. And that was the schooling that I got. And I was hoping to be a coxswain out of school, but I didn't make it. So they assigned me to a crew. And that's where we made up the crew. And after we did our training, we went up to Virginia Beach, and we'd hit the beach and let the ramps down. This was, of course, on an LCI. That's what they trained us on.
Which was?
Landing Craft Infantry. And went up to, I don't know, down through the Delaware Canal or something, over to Annapolis. We spent the night at the Navy Academy. So that was a highlight in my career. I've always wanted to go there, so I had a chance. We tied up overnight. And from there, we stopped by Cambridge, Maryland. We had a pharmacist mate that he was from Cambridge, Maryland, and his family came down and visited with him while we were tied up there. Then on back to the base, and finally we got our orders to go to Portland, Oregon. So we got on a troop train out of Washington, D.C., 5 days across, took the Great Northern Route, went down through Seattle and on down to Portland. Then they put us in barracks there till we, till they finished the ship so we could go aboard and start putting it in commission and putting all the equipment on it.
Can I back up just a moment?
Sure.
And ask you to kind of describe your train ride, if you will, for the...
Oh, that was quite a trip. I remember pulling into Chicago stockyards, and that thing stayed there for a little while, longer than we wanted because the smell was bad. So we pulled out of Chicago and finally and went on up through St. Paul, Minnesota, on through Montana. And it was a steam engine, and we were all dressed in whites. And, of course, no air conditioning on that train there, and you let the windows down, and the senators were coming back. And by the time we got to Portland, Oregon, we looked like we were as smutty as all get out. The sheets and everything were just full of senators, and we were just so glad to get off there and get a shower and get a change of clothes. But it was a scenic ride. I really enjoyed it, going through Idaho up in the mountains and what have you, and look at the mountain streams down below. Anyway, through Missoula, Montana, Spokane, Washington, beautiful country. But anyway, after we got aboard ship, then we had to... I guess break the ship in a little bit because we had to run the engines and all of that and try to see, take different trips, and everybody had to get assigned a job aboard ship, and the captain wanted me on the wheel to guide the ship because he just figured that I had enough boats and mate training that I should know something about how to steer the ship. But anyway, he'd give us the orders. And anyway, after we pulled out of Portland, Oregon, put the ship in commission, we went down to San Diego.
I'm sorry?
The name of the ship.
Yes. It was LCS, Landing Craft Support, number 49.
How many people in the crew?
We had 70 men aboard ship.
70?
Mm-hmm. And
how long was the ship? What's the size?
We were 158 feet long, and the beam was 20-something feet. I think it was 20-foot beam, 158-foot length.
And the depth for drawing the water?
That I really don't know. It's in the book here. It tells you
we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I was leading up to the question I asked you before about how it rode in the seas. In the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Well, after we got to San Diego, then some of the fellows went to a gunnery school. We got a little bit of liberty there. Then we did a shakedown cruise off of San Clemente Island, which is offshore. And they did a mock invasion with the planes, airplanes and everything. And we got to shell the beach and all this kind of stuff. And then back to Dago, and we pulled out of Dago.
San Diego.
From San Diego. It had to been in October. It took us 10 days to get from San Diego to Pearl Harbor. And I spent my 19th birthday at Waikiki Beach. I got liberty. So... went ashore and went to Waikiki Beach, and remember the Royal Hawaiian Hotel because it was a pink hotel and they were using it for submariners R&R. What's that called?
Rest and rehabilitation.
I think that was it, yes. So, better do a timeout. Anyhow, we reached Pearl Harbor by October 20th in 1944. Spent my 19th birthday at Honolulu, Waikiki Beach. Then after we got some more installation of radar equipment and some more machine guns mounted aboard ship, we sailed for the Ellis Islands, and from there to the Solomon Islands, and on the way we crossed the equator. We were all initiated King Neptune, a tradition. My hair was all cut in chunks, so the only solution was a shaved head. Then we sailed for Hollandia, New Guinea.
Hollandia.
Mm-hmm. There we picked up food supplies, and somebody bought a monkey. So we had a monkey aboard ship, and it really made the fun for the whole crew. And one day he fell overboard, and we had to turn around to pick him up. And in that way, we got out of formation, and the executive officer, who was the flotilla commander, signaled back and wondered why we were out of formation, and we had to tell him that we had to pick the monkey up. So, going back to, I played a little bit of saxophone, and I had my saxophone aboard ship, and I was out on the fantail, which is the stern of the ship, one night playing my sax. And the executive officer came back and told me that I needed to quit playing that horn. He said we were coming close to Guadalcanal, and music sounds going across the ocean. They could hear it, so I didn't do that anymore. He got on my case. So from there, we went on to in a convoy to the Philippines, and we pulled into Leyte in a town named Tacloban. Then we sailed from Tacloban up to San Antonio, which was Luzon, for an invasion there. It was like a dry run. We didn't have any opposition landing troops there. Then we went to Subic Bay, and we were there for, I don't remember just how long a time, but we had PT boats that were working out of there that would go up into Manila Bay and sink whatever they could sink, and they'd leave out late in the afternoons and they'd come back at daylight. Then we got orders for an invasion of Marvellous Harbor, and the invasion went well. They had B-24 Liberators came over and raked the beach with bombs. And after everything was secure and all the troops landed in, then they gave us orders to anchor in Marvellous Harbor.
How do you spell Marvellous?
M-A-R-V-E-L-O-U-S, Marvellous Harbor. And after that, everyone was put on battle station. We got under condition 2, which meant 50% of the crew was on watch. And I was lucky to get the 12 to 4 watch, what was midnight to 4. And I was on the bridge when I saw the ship on our right go up in flames. So I went to the pilot house. The captain was sleeping on a cot there, to wake the captain, and he said to sound the alarm from general quarters and battle stations. So I blasted 3 times on the alarm, and we got hit by the first suicide boat. I went down on deck to grab a hose off the side of the ship to fight fire in the engine room. The chief motormech said the pumps were knocked out, and it was no use. Then I went to the bow of the ship, and we got hit by the second suicide boat. Some of the crew had already hit the water. Then I heard the captain say, "Abandon ship." Already had my life jacket on, so I jumped. The explosion blew a large life raft off the ship, and I swam over to grab hold. There were 9 of us on that raft with no bottom in it, but the paddles were still strapped lashed to it, so we got down, got them loose, and started paddling for shore. Don't know how far away it was, the beach, how far away the beach was, but we got there just before daylight. You can't, it's hard to determine distance over water, so I really don't know how far it was, but land was in sight, so it just took us a while to get there. While in the water, near our ship, fire was on the water everywhere, and we had machine gun fire, tracer bullets flying right over our heads, so we were ducking under the raft. At daylight, we were picked up from the beach by PT boats and then transferred to an LST landing ship tanks, 300 foot long, that was made into a hospital ship. The morning we were picked up, paratroopers landed on Corregidor. And aboard the hospital ship, some injured paratroopers were there on it too, so we lost about 30 men from our ship out of our crew. And then we headed back to Subic Bay. Then we transferred wounded to a regular hospital ship. I was lucky, no wounds, but my ears rang for a couple of weeks. That explosion was something else. When I hit the water, I was some kind of scared. I started praying and repeating John chapter 14. Life could have ended any time for me, but God spared my life. And I promised God if he would save me, I would try to serve him. I hadn't been as faithful as I should, but I'm trying. We were put on an old World War I destroyer and set sail for the island of Samar. There we slept in cots on a cemetery for 3 days.
In a cemetery?
On a cemetery. Had a tarpaulin over us. But we were waiting to get transportation back to the States. Then we caught a ship to the Admiralty Islands near New Guinea. There we got a new issue of clothes. All this time we only had on our backs were the clothes we jumped into the water with. Then we caught a merchant ship back to the States. A 30-day trip. Sailed under the Golden Gate Bridge, San Francisco, April the 3rd, 1945, Easter Sunday. We were bused to Treasure Island for 3 days. New clothes and physical, then a 30-day survivor's leave. I got home April the 10th, my mother's birthday. After leave was finished, I had to report to Mayport Naval Air Station for reassignment. Tried out for the baseball team, but no luck. Too small, but was hoping to make the team and get stationed there. My order sent me to Bremerton, Washington, near Seattle. I couldn't be stationed any further from home except Alaska. Spent a few weeks at Bangor, Washington, an ammunition depot, now a Trident sub base. Back to Bremerton, then they assigned me to a naval air station called Alt Field on Whidbey Island. I was assigned to the fire department for duty until I was honorably discharged at Bremerton, Washington, May the 17th, 1946. Enjoyed the fire department duty. We did crash crew duty on the flight lines. No crashes, thank goodness. I bought a 1929 black Chevrolet coupe for $150. Was a lot of fun. We had a crash crew firefighting practice and used 90 octane gas. I used some of that gas in my car. I poured in a quart of oil thinking that would dilute it down. The car had a great heater. The manifold came through the floorboard and had an on and off valve. Sure did put out good heat. Visited Bellingham, Vancouver, Canada, Mount Baker with snow 8 foot high on each side. Ski Lodge was almost covered. Beautiful country. Saw a couple of big bands. Tommy Dorsey at the base. Tommy Tucker at the base. And Tommy Dorsey at a little town called Ferndale, Washington, skating rink. It was packed out. Let's see. My duty at the base also was to check all firefighting equipment, all CO2 bottles on the flight line, and all used bottles were brought back to be refilled. Then I was played a lot of ping pong, basketball, and softball. We had a good baseball team, Firehouse Gang. We played the base team and won. We had a good pitcher. He had just signed with the Yankees before he got in the Navy.
What was your position for the team?
Catcher.
Catcher. Oh.
I went to a lot of skating rinks in different towns when I was in Portland, Oregon. I went to the Oaks Amusement Park skating rink. I don't know.
Okay, hold on a minute.
Claude, I want to ask you to back up, please, to your experiences on the ship. Well, when you were en route to Pearl Harbor, we were talking a moment ago about your job assignments on the ship and so forth. Would you talk about that?
Yes. Being a boatswain mate, you were in charge of everything to be lashed down to make it seaworthy. Because if you get in rough water, everything needed to stay. So I had a lot of probably 8 or 10 paint cans, 5-gallon paint cans, stored in the bow. They call it the forecastle of the ship, which is the bow of the ship. And I thought I had it seaworthy. Well, when we got off of San Diego and you get those ground swells out there, that you'd hit those things and the flat bottom boat would just vibrate so until it broke those things loose. And so the executive officer hollered out on the loudspeaker and says, Haddock, you better get up there and take care of those paint cans because they're rolling around on that deck. So I had to go up there, and it was rough. And I threw the paint cans over the side because I sure didn't want to be messing up that ship with paint everywhere. But it was something that I thought I had that ship seaworthy, but it really wasn't. And that was an experience that I'll never forget because we had a 3-inch 50 up gun on the bow, and I would hold on to that bow, and when it would get where I could go get another paint can, I'd throw it over and then hold on. But anyhow, that was the only rough water we went through the whole the tour that I was on. That South Pacific was just great. We didn't have anything like the North Atlantic in rough weather. Of course, we went out maybe the time of the year that we went, it was a better deal because I've heard fellas talk about going through typhoons on these aircraft carriers, a buddy of mine. And he said, boy, they are something to go through. But we didn't hit any rough weather at all. Everything was smooth sailing. I'm going to take a time out here until I can.
Okay, hold on.
Claude, I wanted to ask you, you told us about your experience up in that beautiful piece of the country around Seattle and Vancouver. How did the Navy, your wartime experience, really affect your life, how you conducted your life afterwards, after your discharge and your post-war life?
Well, I was involved in my church before I went to service. And when I came back, of course, I took up where I left off. And I was real fortunate, like I said, to have survived and came back to the States. And I think every veteran that came back really appreciated life more. And it was a great time of, you know, people back in there was a little poor television, and families were visited one another, and there was a lot more togetherness with the families than there. After TV came on, the family sort of drifted away and things weren't the same. Even though times were hard, you just appreciated what you had a lot more. It was hard to get an automobile. You put your name on a list, and when I first got married, I had no no car, so I borrowed my dad's car. And so times were rough. Even to go on a honeymoon, I had to use my dad's car.
So you came back to live in Fernandina Beach?
Came right back to Fernandina Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Been right here ever since.
And what did you do? Where did you work?
Then I went back to the mill to see if I could resume my old job. I was scaling pulpwood. And the fella told me, well, we don't have any room for you. So I came down, and they were hiring at the post office. So I went down and made an application and started working at the post office. And been there, started in 1946, and retired in 1980. So I pulled 34 years at the U.S. Post Office downtown Fernandina Beach.
Downtown,
mm-hmm.
on Main Street, Center
mm-hmm.
Street.
And,
Now, how many children do you have?
I have three children.
Three children.
And they all three live here in Fernandina.
Wow.
And I have four grandchildren. Greg Haddock, who is the property appraiser for Nassau County, is my son. And my son, Mark Haddock, is a millwright who works with Jefferson Smurfit. And my daughter is Claudia Haddock, and she's a librarian and been in the school system. She's working in Callahan Elementary School. And so they've all been raised right here on the Amelia Island.
You're very fortunate. I wanted to back one more Navy question, please. I've been thinking while you're talking about your experience on the ship, a small ship like it. How was your food?
We had good cooks. Getting back to one of the fellows that was a cook, he had nine children, and I couldn't figure out how he got in the Navy. I don't know how it came about. I never did ask him. But he didn't make it. He got killed. He died aboard the hospital ship. He had nine children. But food was good. We had dehydrated eggs and the powdered eggs, they called them. You just mix water with them, and that was how they cooked them. But I remember one time we were loading supplies in Hollandia, New Guinea, and in order to get so much beef aboard ship, you had to take so much mutton. All of this came from Australia. So the fellas knew when the mutton came by, and they just dropped it over the side, and we just put the beef in the cooler. So that's how we got around that part of it.
How big was the galley?
You know, I really can't remember. I remember the mess hall, and we slept in our quarters, four bunks high, I believe it was. I had the top bunk, and no problem getting up there, my size. But it was the quarters were close. And it's a funny thing, I went aboard a submarine in Fall River, Massachusetts, and looked at the bunks in a submarine, a World War II sub. And some of those fellas had to share bunks, because you had a guy was on duty, and the other fellow would be sleeping.
Hot bunking.
That's right.
Hot bunking.
Hot bunking.
Tell me about the officers. How were they?
We had good officers aboard ship. We tried to have a few religious worship services. And we had an executive officer. We had a gunnery officer. And captain, of course. Let's see, we had four officers. Communications officer. And I think that was it. But we were a tight-knit group. Everybody knew everyone. We had one fellow aboard ship who was the barber and did all the hair cutting. He was an older fella. In fact, you ran into quite a few fellas that were up in age a little bit, because they were drafting and people were going and volunteering who wanted to be a part of the war. And so it just wasn't kids out of high school. It was people who had left jobs at home and families at home, really, that had their own children.
Patriotic.
Patriotic, that's right.
Did you meet anybody on the ship that you particularly perhaps did not like too well? Were there some characters, personalities that weren't?
Well, some of them were a little bit maybe that way. The gunnery crew, of course, they were together before they joined us, and they sort of hung together. And the rest of us who were in training for different various jobs, I guess we sort of probably fellowshiped with one another more so than the others, but we all had to get together. We all had to do our jobs. We had one black boy aboard ship, and of course, most of every one of the blacks that were in the Navy back in those days, they made cooks out of them. They were in the galley, and they would serve and what have you. But his job was to, he was a loader on the 40 millimeter. And it was, seemed like it was, he was kind of scared of the job, but anyway, when it came time to do it, he was right there. And
did you have many air attacks? You had to repel aircraft?
No, we didn't. We sure didn't. We were lucky. I tell you, I feel like I only had about 5 months overseas. I was back in the States. And some of the fellows that were over, I remember talking to some of them on our way back, that were reassigned. They didn't get to come back to the States. They just put them on another ship, and they had to stay over. So we were wondering what was going to happen to us after we were sunk, whether they were going to send us back to the States or not. And so there was, we found out that we were coming back. Of course, we were all tickled to death. And after we got back, everybody just went their own way.
And you haven't seen any of these fellows since?
There was one boy that lived in Jacksonville. His name was Danny Logan, and he was a gunner's mate. And he and I traveled together a good bit. In fact, after the war, and I was working at the post office, he was selling insurance, and he'd stop by, and we'd visit that way and talk. But I never did get with him just to go over and sit down and talk with him. He has since passed away, but that was the only one that I ever got in touch with.
So you're all busy with your lives.
Right.
Getting on with it.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Anything else you can think of that about your experience, the Navy experience at all?
Let's see. Oh, after we got out of, after we were discharged, there were four of us guys who thought we would pool our money and buy a car and drive it to Chicago, sell the car and split up and go our different ways. But it didn't pan out. They all chickened out or something, so I just came on home on the train. We got traveling so much per mile from Bremerton to Jacksonville. I remember when I was on my way home on the train, the trains went on strike in Albany, Georgia. So I got out and grabbed my gear and got out on the road and started hitchhiking. So I hitchhiked until I got to Lake City from Albany, Georgia. And then I caught the bus into Jacksonville. So I got in at night. I can't remember just what time it was, but you could check into a USO club and spend the night there. So that's what I did. And I wanted to come home back to Amelia Island in the daylight. I didn't want to come in at night, so I stayed over that night. Had I called my folks, they would have come over and picked me up for sure. But anyway, I got my own wish and got home when it was day.
Did you have any brothers, perhaps, in the service, too?
My brother came along 8 years after me, and he joined the Air Force the day he got out of high school. So he spent 4 years in the Air Force, and he was an aircraft mechanic, machinist, worked on big motors, and he spent all of his time in the States. He ended up in Sacramento, California, but he'd fly home every so often.
I want to ask you, I think about your, again, how your communication over mail home back and forth, was it difficult to...
No, funny thing, I need to go back and tell a story. After we were sunk, we pulled back into Tacloban and went ashore and picked up 24 bags of mail because we hadn't had any mail since we had gone up to the island of Leyte. And I went in the pilot house and got the long glass
telescope,
and I knew my buddy that lived across the street from me. We graduated from high school together. He was on a destroyer escort, and I knew the number of his ship. So I got the signalman on the bridge to signal over to him and tell him about my experience. And they were having inspection aboard his ship that day, so he couldn't get off to come over to see me or visit with me. And so I had it. The signalman let him know that my ship had sunk. And so one afternoon, my mother and his mother went to the theater, went to the show. And on the way home, she told me, she says, you know, Claude's ship has sunk, because my mother hadn't heard from me at all. And in fact, they didn't hear from me from February the 6th. Well, whenever they got the last letter from me in February, until I got back to the States. And so that was in April. And so there was a few months there that they didn't know anything, but she told my mother on the way home from the show that she said that she got a letter from her son saying that my ship was sunk, but I was all right. So physically I wasn't hurt. And That was something that I couldn't blame anybody but myself, because I think I could have written and let my folks know sooner than I did. And I'm ashamed of that, because, you know, people who have children want to know where they are and all about them. And that's a few regrets that I have in life, that I didn't do what I should have done.
That's not unusual, I don't think.
Well, I guess moving from place to place and being aboard a ship, I don't know where I could have really got a letter to my mother, because we weren't near any land base where I could have got a letter mailed to her. But all your mail went free. All you do was write a free up in the corner of the envelope. And, of course, the way my buddy explained to his mother, in order to get it by the censor, because they censored your mail, he said, as you know, Claude's ship was sunk. So it passed on through. So that's the way he got it through.
Very clever.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I think that could about wrap it up, Claude.
It should.
We thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For taking the time to do this. It's a very interesting story. You really paint a vivid picture of the times. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Can you turn it off?
No, I thought we were ready.
So, what did I do? What did I do?
You want to...